Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I'm joined by one of the wonderful people of the EV Cafe, and this week is no exception. I've got the lovely John Curtis. John, hello, how are you?
Oh, do you know what? I'm absolutely buzzing for today because our guest is somebody very, very special that I've known for a long time, but know very little about. We always talk work, and I'm fascinated to see who this is behind the job title, because Mark is quite some guy.
Well, talk about steal my thunder. But anyway, let's introduce, because we are joined every week, as always, by innovators, pioneers, collaborators, industry big brains. And we've just discovered this man has the brain the size of a planet. And we're going to explore said brain. We're first journeying into the brain of Mark Pierce from Hydrock, data and AI engineering lead, no less, in a world that is immensely complicated. But we have talked recently on the podcast about AI, so this is going to be a very interesting chat. Mark, very welcome to you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's great to finally be on one, not just watching and listening in.
It's you that listens to them.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, well, I'm the one viewer. there are definitely more than me. Just to clarify, a brain the size of a planet, but very little in it. Let's just be clear. get started.
Well, let's find out exactly what's there. So, talk to me about your job title, data and AI engineering lead. Of course, AI is a very new thing, or relatively new. So just talk us, Hydrock, give us the lift speech. So we've just jumped in the lift. Oh, hello, Mark, you look interesting. Tell me a little bit about what you do and what your job title even means.
Yeah. So basically, I moved jobs. So as John and you will know, I was focused in the EV sector for... from an engineering standpoint for the last 3 or 4 years. And as part of that, it sort of grew arms and legs into looking at ways to optimize net zero strategies and things like that. So it was what we did is we moved over into what we call a central function overhead team. So we were able to work with all of the different divisions in our engineering consultancy, so Hydrock, now Stantec, because we recently acquired by Stantec, but then basically be able to you know take what we learned in terms of big data, you know, having to analyze traffic patterns for the entirety of the UK, etc., and then apply that across everything we do, and to help manage that, we also use AI, and that's not, you know, ChatGPT is wonderful, but when it turns to engineering calculations, it doesn't like it that much. So we have to build our own. So that's where that sort of come from. So it's about, you know, analyzing big data and then using AI to further that goal. And the aim of it really is to create solve the problems that surround us with climate change. There are limiting factors. It's not, you know, wave a magic wand and everyone drives EVs. It's there are a lot of problems to solve. There are still a lot of problems to solve. And as part of that, as engineers, that's our challenge. To push it forward, that's what we're doing. That's how we're trying to solve it.
Mark, there's an awful lot of fear about AI in the world, and and I think it comes from a lack of understanding. We are embracing AI as much as we can at the EV Cafe. Excuse me, I use it quite a lot in terms of creating content. But for many, there is a fear that AI is going to lead us down a path we do not want to go down. How do you help people understand what AI can do for us without it causing us difficulty?
I think... a key thing is to understand, I think AI can appear very scary when you look at it from a broad picture. And there's a lot of things that now use AI, but the reality is it still has very much its limitations and will continue to do so for quite a long time because it still relies on a lot of computing power. And although, you know, computing power is getting better and better, it's nowhere near the sort of like crazy prance level it needs to be to, you know, replicate a human mind. So while it can be very good at helping solve very, very specific equations, very, very specific challenges, and GPT is a prime example of this, it's very good at solving general questions. So looking up answers on the internet, helping write code, you know, doing the bulk work and stuff. But if you need to do something very, very specific, so it's like, oh, I need a structural calculation for this cross-section of beam, it's just, it loses it completely. Whereas what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to have that, done by an engineer, checked by an engineer. And that also, you know, comes down to accountability. You know, at what point are we going to have to say, well, at some point someone's going to have to check this, but we can't just blame the machine. And there's a brilliant film, which I don't know whether you've seen, about a group of black women who worked in NASA. I can't remember the name of the film. It's really annoying me now. Yes. Absolutely brilliant film. And in that, the IBM machine they bring in that's going to replace everyone's jobs and do that, on the day, the calculations come out of two different numbers. Yeah. And they need someone to check it. And that is, you know, it doesn't matter how good technology gets, there's always going to be that point. And I think that's what people need to focus on, is that, you know, what it is there is to do is enhance your job, not replace it. And think about all the free time then you can do to do all the fun things that the AI can't do, the more complicated, the more challenging stuff, and leave the boring stuff to the someone who can do it in terms of AI.
It's called Hidden Figures, Mark.
Hidden Figures. Thank
film.
You. I knew I had something to do with the key lines in the film. I can remember what it was. Yes, Hidden Figures. Yeah. Thank you.
So, I mean, in our industry, for instance, we've got Tesla, an autopilot using AI. And I remember when I did my law degree, there was a question about if AI had to make a decision between plowing into a child with a car or plowing into a 70-year-old vicar with a car, which choice would it make? Humans can't surely be involved in engineering to that degree that you can make that value judgment. It's a very hard and fast tool.
Yeah, it gets complicated at that stage. And I think that's part of the thing, is one of the questions, you know, we're talking about engineering questions that haven't been answered. It's how to deal with those sorts of problems.
Yeah.
And I think, because the paradox you're talking about there was originally to do with, if you're stood next to a railway point, and there's a trolley bus going towards, you know, two different sets of people who are tied to the tracks, which one do you move? You know, that's kind of that was the original paradox, and all they've done is just that's the same for then as it is now. Is it that at what point does if the machine is changing the point rather than the human, does it make the decision it needs to make? And that's where we're not really at yet. We're still working on that bit. And I think at some point, you know, there's going to be a challenge there around, is it the right decision? And part of it's going to be along the way, if we're going to have to try it and see. Because the key thing is, like, people picture that scenario and they're worried about that scenario. But how often do you reckon in the real world that scenario comes up? Mm-hmm. The vehicle is just not able to stop when it needs to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, the trick is that it just needs to be safer than humans. That's the criteria we're trying to get at. It's like when you talk about autonomous vehicles, it's like your criteria isn't perfection. It's got to be better than us. Yes. And I think that's the real point around the AI in vehicles kind of thing.
Mm. Mm. Humans need somebody to blame often. You know, when something goes wrong, when we lose somebody from our lives because of an accident, we want somebody to point the finger at, you know. Now that is a natural human response, and we will blame AI very, very quickly, you know, if we can, because it's an inanimate thing and we can kind of scream at it, and you know, it's harder than to blame humans. But anyway, I think that this is a lot of philosophical thinking, but in reality, your time as in Hydrock and travel planning is something that we've even been talking about today with London and congestion zones and the idea of charging for congestion zones. We don't need AI to tell us that that's going to cause some people grief, and some people will be very happy about said sort of conundrum around this charging. What have you learned from travel planning and the incentivizing that can really bring, you know, from, so Hydra, what do they bring to the party to help around understanding, you know, migration of travel and people and all of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, well, I think the key thing is accessibility. I mean, from like the 1960s onwards, it's, you know, the UK has always remained very car focused and car heavy. Since the abolition of public transport, really, with the Beeching Act and all this kind of stuff that went on, you know, and the removal of, you know, railway lines from rural locations, you know, especially where I am, because I'm based in Cornwall. You know, we've got one main line goes in and out, and that's it. and you know, and a couple of branch lines, but not masses, not like we used to have, and certainly, you know, in other places it's not as good. And now we're sort of trying to claw back from that. We're trying to encourage this alternative modes. We're trying to say, okay, the car isn't the answer to everything. And now we're having to readjust our strategy as a whole. And what we found really is we're looking for little gains, because it's the little gains that can make a big difference. You're not going to get, you know, if you've got 20% of people currently cycling, you're very unlikely to get 40% of people, 50% of people, 60% of people cycling. You want to get that 25%, that 30% first. And it's about encouraging, you know, what puts people off, you know, is it safety in a particular location? Is it security? Mm. Is it, you know, what does it look like? And then you try and solve those problems at a local basis. So you're like, okay, we're going to provide a new cycleway, better lockup facilities for a cycle in, you know, it's inside the office, inside lockers. And for example, things like that, you know, you don't have to park it on the street. You don't have to park it here, which is, you know, traditionally where it's been, what's been the case. So, yeah, a lot of that kind of thing is what we're looking at in terms of, you know, so especially cycle, public transport routes, you know, increasing the number of buses when we can, developer contributions when they're building houses, which, you know, a lot of people don't talk about when, you know, when a housing development goes in, you think, okay, well, they're just making a load of money off the houses, but actually quite a considerable amount of that goes back into the local authority to increase the number of bus services or increase that. And that's done under, you know, section 278 and section 106 agreements. So it's, you know, that kind of element is that. I'm going back to my old job there. That's back in transport planning. I've not done that for a long time. But that's really critical. That's really key in terms of getting that sustainable angle. Cause it's, you know, it's that behavior change that's really important.
Yeah. And does your new job in data and AI engineering, how does it lend itself to behavioral change, or doesn't it? Is it more about analysis and you know, outcomes that could then generate behavior change?
Yeah, so definitely more so. I mean, one thing we do a lot of is behavioral modeling in our team, and part of that is things like, so Strat EV, for example, which is our sort of flagship EV product we use with load of developers, is understanding how and where people are going to charge and what they need. But then specifically then, you know, from the back end of that, what do you need to power it? Because it's all well and good saying, okay, I'm going to whack in 36 chargers here that are all 120, 150 DC. But if you can't power that at peak load, what does it look like? You know, and what does curtailment look like? And actually, if you curtail people, if you say, okay, well, actually only at peak times, you can only have 60 or 50. What does that do for your customer base and et cetera, and your business case? And that's what we look at from a developer standpoint to then say, okay, well, okay, when you're looking at leasing these or whatever you're going to do with these charging spaces, you know, you need to consider these facts and make sure you can actually get the connection you want from the grid. And if you're not, you can bolster it with battery storage and PV. And that's what we're sort of looking at in terms of that. Interestingly enough, we've just put in a bid. I can't say for what, unfortunately, but we have just put in a bid, which is reliant on, so is encouraging the use of EV vehicles to make communities better where they suffer from air quality issues en route to a major airport. So it's like there's an airport sort of out of the way a little bit, and you have to, you know, come off the main road to get to it, and it goes through a lot of tiny communities and that kind of thing. That's where our sort of focus is at the moment. Less so on the, like, the travel, the transport guys do the sustainability angle and things like that, but that's more because it's so focused on the specific problems in a location or an area rather than a wider strategy. They focus on that bit, and you know, so that's sort of where we're at, if you see what I mean.
I do, Mark, and it leads me to the question, because this, you're talking about your job and you know, sustainability is obviously playing a real important part in it, and EV is has been a focus of yours, and ultimately is sort of the solution in many of the challenges that you're being faced with today. Mm. But how did you get here? Because, I mean, you know, sustainability wasn't, you know, born in us when we woke up, you know, or we were born and we went through school and da-da-da-da. How did you get to this point? Because obviously you're obviously very clever. You do have a lot of capacity certainly within your field of expertise. What is it that got you into that sustainability piece? Why do you want to use your intellect, your knowledge to make life more sustainable for others?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting one. I think, so I was talking about, so fine, speaking of John about this the other day, but so I didn't start off, I left school at 16 and went off to go did an apprenticeship on a rail network. So working with Network Rail, one of their consultants called Vital Rail, and basically learned to be what I commonly refer to as a track monkey. If anyone is listening, don't take that offensively. It's just what we used to call ourselves. Where I think it varies depending on different regions, etc. But you know, that was actually physically going out and moving the track and doing this kind of stuff, because I've always had an interest in railways. And turns out as a job, I hated it. like as a hobby, great. As a career, terrible. So I left that role and then joined. And really, where my sustainability focus came from was working at Tesco for about 6 months. And because interestingly enough, everything they did there, I work in a Cornwall location. So it's very rural, and you know, they were talking about, you know, we've got three lorry deliveries a day. They're all coming from Wales or whatever. They were coming from the distribution center, traveling hundreds of miles. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, how much fuel are they burning to do all of this? You know, and it's peak summer, you know, everyone comes to Cornwall, but everyone drives. Well, certainly at the time when I worked there, everyone drove, everyone did everything. And you're thinking, you know, just for this holiday, just for this, you know, for something that is a luxury for a lot of people, I mean, the amount of carbon and energy that's going into the, you know, into the air and nitrous oxide and stuff like that. And you're starting to think, wow, this is mad. And, you know, due to my passion and I was very lucky in a way, because due to my passion in engineering, I got a job at Cormac, which is the sort of arm's length company of Cornwall Council. So essentially working for the local authority. To design roads, to being what I refer to as a CAD monkey to John earlier as well. Everyone knows what that is, and essentially just designing roads up and things like that. But because of that interest, because of that peak of sustainability, looking at that, I got headhunted into the transport planning team there, and then it sort of grown from there. So, you know, transport into Hydroc, and then from there it was like, okay, well, you know, transport is no longer just about cars moving around or buses moving around or cycles moving around. It's actually part of this interconnected network of all these other things and all these other disciplines now, you know, energy sector, flood risk, geoclimate, you know, all these kind of things. And our smart energy and sustainability team looking at, you know, climate risk, et cetera, things like that. So all of that needs to come together. And as part of that, I've sort of become a focal pin of the data side. So how do we bring all this data together? What can we make out of it? What can we use it for? And things like that. So that's what we're, you know, that's how that sort of came about, if you see what I mean.
That's a really useful explanation, Mark, because I was just sitting here thinking Hydroc is one of those behemoths of the world that few have heard of. What is the breadth of activity that you undertake as an organization? What do you do?
Yeah, so it's all the major engineering disciplines. So it's things like, so structural engineering, mechanical, electrical. We have a nuclear team who does like nuclear management consultancy. We've got geo, flood risk, transport. I'm just trying to list them all off now, but it's essentially all the engineering disciplines. I'm going to miss people out. But now we've just joined Stantec. So we were originally 1,000 strong, mainly focused in the UK. Couple of international offices, so in Australia and New Zealand and in the Middle East as well. And now we've just been acquired by Stantec, so that's a 36,000 strong organization headed out of Canada. So the breadth has expanded quite massively for us. And our first instinct was to get in the door, and we were already having conversations about, okay, well, we've got, you know, jobs in Pittsburgh or Kansas and things like that, where we can take our sustainability knowledge, where, you know, the Americas at the moment probably lagging a bit behind, certainly in some states. Mm. And we're now bringing that forward and saying, well, actually, here's what we've learned. Here's what you can do. Here's what, you know, here's a new sustainability angle, increasing cycle links within certain cities, et cetera. So, it's really nice to have that sort of door open and then be like, okay, well, this is, we can now share our knowledge with the world rather than just having, you know, this individual sector, which is nice.
Has it given both Hydrock and Stantec Union coming together, has it given you a new vision? Do you feel energized, let's use the be cheesy, to see what you suggested there, like reaching a bigger audience, moving it forward and really driving that sustainability message home?
Yeah, and that was something I was really pleased about the acquisition, because it was so obviously when you're a smaller company, you know, we were the one of the last British owned consultancies, large consultancies, the size that left. Now we have been bought up by a Canadian organization, but the UK global front is very big. There's, you know, 4,000 of them, and including us now. So it's a big element of it. And what actually really excites me is not necessarily the work or the jobs or what they have access to, although that, you know, that's going very well. And, you know, the reason the acquisition happened was because they needed a lot more people to deal with the work that they were getting in. But also because their main focus is sustainability, and all their staff have that as a key focus of what they do. And you feel it. Mm. You feel it through the company. It's, you know, imagine just going into a room of people and you think, oh God, you know, we've been acquired and we don't know who these people are going to be like. And you sort of go in there and all like, you know, oh yeah, I drive a Jag and all this kind of stuff. And it's, you go like that and you're like, oh no, yeah. I play golf on the weekend. I take my private jet over to holidays to Mallorca, and you're like, oh no, please stop talking. It's not like that. It's really sustainable in a really good way, and really about giving back to communities. You know, just the other week, you know, the Stantec Group, we've just been acquired. It's only been a couple of months, but they've already said, okay, we're doing this community allotment thing where we really want to expand and help allotments grow, because they're really good for the environment and they're really good for communities. You know, in terms of, you know, reducing dependence on, you know, mega stores to be able to provide vegetables, you can get them locally. Also, there's a green patch that you can go work essentially in a city. And they did that in Bristol, and that was phenomenal. I'm really excited for what the future brings. It's Hydrock, but scaled up to a level where you can start making a global difference, which is excellent.
So nice. Up till now, what's the thing that you are most proud of having delivered? Because you've worked on some phenomenal projects.
Oh, most proud of is a tricky one. There was a site recently, actually, I'd say probably the most recent. To me, the most exciting projects are always the ones that are on now, because by the time I've done a site, technology's moved on to a point where I can start playing with new stuff, right? That's the key thing. Like, I am totally the new and shiny, absolutely. Everything is like, if it's new, it's shiny, I want to play with it. And I'm awful for that. And as that reason, you know, we've just completed a study where we've balanced off, you know, large scale battery infrastructure to deal with a service station DC charging, and with, you know, solar energy and things like that. And actually what we found is that, you know, we could, you know, resizing grid connections and looking at it a different way, we could service a lot of the energy through this sort of like green, you know, local sustainable energy. And what we were talking about there was energy security.
Yes.
Because if they're not relying on the grid, if the grid goes out for whatever reason, then they've got the energy supply on site. You just flicks over, and they can still trade and they can still do this. And actually that made a massive difference. So, you know, that kind of element is probably, you know, I say proudest of, just because I like new and shiny technology, being able to couple all those things together in one model and go, oh yeah, it does work.
I love this stuff, because this is really interesting. You see somebody so passionate about something which, frankly, blows my mind. I couldn't even begin to think about a day in the life of Mark Pierce. But you, I can feel that excitement for what you do. Have you always loved data, or is this something you've learned to develop?
Oh no, I've always been keen on data. Numbers is what I, you know, while people were reading, you know, Harry Potter, I was sat there reading diagrams of steam engines and drawings and working out how they all work and stuff like that. You know, the compression ratios and things like that. Just wow. A massive nerd from day one. And But you know, the reality was is that it, you know, I enjoy Lord of the Rings. I enjoy the fantasy style as well. But from really on, what really gets me going is the problem solving. That feeling when you solve a problem. It's not necessarily the numbers that are the interesting bit for me. It's not, you know, I don't look at a sheet of numbers and get really excited. It's now I've made something from that didn't currently exist.
Yes.
You talk about inspirational characters. You're looking at, you know, people are, you know, people might say Elon Musk or something like that. It's nothing to do with, for me. No, I'm not really that interested in that. It's too political. For me, my idol is Wallace from Wallace and Gromit. You know, just being able to like build a spaceship out of parts because, you know, why not? You know, that's I've got a bunch of data. What can I build a spaceship out of this? Why not? You know, let's give it a go. And that's the kind of element I'm in. So it's, you know, slightly eccentric, but
love that. Mark, you've used the N word. Nerd, and it's a word that has been used for me, and I think probably Paul in his day has been talked about as a van nerd. Being a nerd, I think is a superpower, but it's difficult for other people sometimes to relate to you on a human level because we're quite special, and we have these talents that others don't readily identify with. Has being a nerd made your life better or harder in terms of other people?
Certainly from early on, harder. Like, you know, in the best world in the world, kids are unforgiving, right? Yes. It's just the way it is. And, you know, school is difficult for me, as you might imagine. But once I came out of school, once I came out of that environment and I went into a work environment where you get pushed into a way that people are passionate about what they do. So like the Cormac guys, you know, brilliant engineers, absolutely through and through. And they'll give you the time of day in terms of like, how do I design this? What do I do? Where do I go from square one? And you start getting into that sort of like knowledge. And then when you connect with people on that basis, you connect with something that they're passionate about. It suddenly doesn't become, you know, a chore anymore. You know, I'm not that into football, really, but I know enough about statistics to be able to talk about it in a way that I can get passionate with someone, right? So it's like I can, you know, it's a way of like you just have to connect with people on different bases about what excites them, what excites to get into them, and once I worked that out, you know, I wasn't particularly popular at Cormac, it has to be said, because I was quite a loud mouth in terms of my opinions. But the, you know, it's all once I learned to sort of rein that back in and go, actually, do you know what? You know, you're only a teenager. You know, I was only a teenager at that point. I joined Cormac at 17. So, you know, I was, you know, one of these cocky teenagers that knew everything. And once I sort of realized that I don't know everything, and to be fair, from that point on, I knew nothing at that point. I still know nothing at this point. And, you know, compared to what, you know, as things grow and things change, you sort of get humbled to yourself and you sort of go, okay, actually, you know what? I can connect with people now because if I come from this at an angle of what I'm just trying to learn more about you. I'm trying to learn more and I can connect with you on what are you passionate about? And that interests me. And what makes people passionate is then, you can turn into a subject. And as someone who, you know, deals with data and like you say, is a self-called nerd, if you will, that's, you know, for me, that was the easiest way to connect with people, you know, analyze them in the most horrible way. But, it is what you do. And you know, you can take a real interest in people's hobbies and you think, actually, no, that's really cool. Yeah.
Mark, is this something that you've had to teach yourself? I mean, you referred back to school. I mean, I had periods of school which were incredibly difficult for various different reasons. And you're right, kids can be really cruel and very difficult. What was it that separated you from your peer groups at that time? Was it, you know, the nerdy interests that you had, or, you know, was it just this lack of ability to communicate, which you clearly addressed in a very definite way now? It's what seems to me like you've almost taken a scientific approach to being able to communicate with others, because we all have to kind of make our way in understanding all of this. Well, how did that sort of play out for you?
Yeah, I mean, trial and error, mostly error. To be honest with you, the you know, I wasn't, even within my friend group, I probably wasn't the most popular, and that was, you know, in I thought that being smart meant you knew everything. And that was so that I had to be a bit of a know-it-all, or and the problem was is that trying to be a know-it-all in a lot of subjects, you don't actually know anything, and and you get very caught out very quickly. So when you got caught out, everyone just pointed and laughed at you, and then you felt silly. And it was, you know, and that was kind of the way it was. And it, you know, even amongst my, you know, my friend group, it was like that. Whereas, you know, as I've grown, as I've talked to more people, as I've, you know, embraced hobbies. I mean, like, this is kind of funny, and people even joke about it in the office. But the average age of the people I hang out with is probably in their mid 60s, 70s, because, you know, I
that's where you like get on with John and I.
You're not that old. Nice try. So because, you know, I'm into model engineering, steam engines, all this kind of stuff, and that's what they interest them. And you know, with my, you know, my other hobby, my wargaming stuff, that kind of, you know, it lends itself a little bit to that age group, and also, you know, others who are similar in terms of their ability to communicate, etc., things like that. So it's nice that now I've sort of had this environment where I can sort of like, okay, I kind of understand what's going on here. I learn from those who have been through that process, who understand that, and also then, you know, apply that in a way that works for me. Because like you say, everyone's different. And it's not like someone can say, okay, and you see these posts on LinkedIn all the time. It's like, the key to communication is X, Y, and Z, and you should always do this in an email. And it's like, don't do that. Just find what works for you and works for the people you're working with. You know, like, be open, be honest, be say, oh, did you like the way I communicated with you? Did you like this? Did you like that? Get feedback. You know, get data. Analyze it and go, yeah, what, did that work? Did that not work? Why did that not work? You know, oh, actually, I kind of annoyed that person. Why did I annoy that person? That wasn't my intention. You know, my intention is never to annoy anyone. So what was the output of that? And then sort of work from there. And sometimes it's just, you know, sucking it up and being like, yeah, no, I made a cock up. You know, this is the kind of point. You know, it's kind of like, all right, yeah, okay, fair enough. I should have done this differently. And I think, you know, the team I have here is really relaxed and really is really chilled. And like I said, the first thing I tell people is don't upset the admin. That's the key. The first rule of Fight Club in Hydro Rock is don't upset the admin, because admin staff do more for anyone than you ever believe. that is the first rule. The second rule is if I'm doing something you are uncomfortable with, and you don't think about my grade, don't think about where I am, what I'm doing, etc., things like that, you tell me instantly, I don't like this, stop. I don't like what you're doing, or I think there's a better way of doing this, you tell me, and I will 100% listen, and I'll take it on board. And if I don't take it on board, by all means, catch me a different day and say, you didn't take it on board. I'm going to, you know, there's a slap on the wrist as well. So that's really nurtured this environment of like innovation, growth. You know, everyone has a good idea. No idea is stupid. You know, if it is a stupid idea and it works, it's not stupid. You know, that was the sort of motto for a lot of stuff we built back in the day. So, you know, this shouldn't work, but it does. So we'll just leave it alone. So that kind of element was really key. And
Mark, it's so impressive to you say you love problem solving. And you really have kind of looked into yourself to see where the problems are, and you've solved them, and you are continually solving. It is quite beautiful to see, and that might sound a very subjective word, but it is quite beautiful to see the way that you have approached life and really made yourself fit within the world around you. And I think it's a real credit to you. And honestly, I for one, feel like I would love to work for you and with you, because I would get so much out of that. Because one, you're constantly analysing. You would help me communicate at my best. I like to think I'm okay at communicating, but there are lots of times where I do upset people, or I do cross boundaries and lines, and I miss it entirely. But I don't think you do. I think you're constantly aware and constantly working on it and constantly developing. And I think you're going to make a massive difference. You've already made a massive difference. I think you're going to continue to do that. And I think, you know, for me, data and AI and engineering is in very, very safe hands from what I can sense. It's just, it excites me. I love communication. I love people. Yeah. And I love this connecting. And you're taking it to a new level. And I love that. It's very exciting, isn't it, John?
Well, I mean,
I can see a question. John.
Yeah, Mark is award-winning, and Mark is quite humble, but recently won an EVs award, didn't you, Mark? Tell us about it.
Yeah, there's the Under 30s Awards, which was I was nominated for by one of my colleagues. Funnily enough, I wasn't in the innovation team at the time, but the team I've now moved into is that they nominated me off the back of some work we did with them. And and I'll tell you what was key about that, and I spoke to the judges sort of like afterwards, because engineering is such a dark art in terms of like no one sees what we do. You're not going to see my name flagged on any post where Osprey developer charging point or Shell Recharge put in a new thing. We tried working in that sector. It didn't really work out for us because what we are better at doing is doing the bit beforehand, doing the planning, working with the developers, working with the investors in that sector, and going, okay, well, what is a successful plan? What does a successful outcome look like for everyone in terms of both net gain, monetary return, and a happy client in the end, i.e. the person plugging their charge in? And that was, so our real intro, ChargeSafe, Kate over at ChargeSafe, absolutely brilliant. She came and did a talk with our team. So they understand, from a very early doors, from literally, from greenfield up, what makes a successful site. Various other teams we worked with over looking at the Shell equipment, looking at Unix, looking at I'm going to miss off a load of people, the 20 odd or so charging point operators we speak to, because there are so many out there. Their solutions, they all excel at their little bit. They got the nation things, and it's just picking the right people per site. It's not one person covers all bases is excellent. I know Sam's going to tell me off for doing that because I know he's good serve, but
doesn't this show you everything you need to know about Mark Pierce? The question was about your genius, and what you do is you focus on everybody else. It's a team game, and the reality was that was a personal award for you. And I think part of your massive, massive power is being so humble about such an incredible ability to infuse, to analyze, to drive things forward and get shit done.
I appreciate that. And I definitely think, I sort of lost my way on that with a tangent, talking about people. But the point of that award really was around some work what we got back from the understanding that you're talking about the communication with people and understanding, the feedback and what we got. And the difference the judges told me for that award purely was around people gave personalized feedback to say, I was really happy with, external clients, people we'd worked with were just like, we were really happy with the communication, the feedback we got, the solution we got from Hydrock and from Mark. And that was really nice for me to hear, because again, you say it's engineering is not a, it doesn't get shouted about enough, especially I would say in the EV sector. A lot of people focus on putting the chargers in the ground, but there's a hell of a lot of work that needs to go behind before you do that. And in terms of just, is it suitable? Is it safe? Is it going to be sustainable? Just because if you're just plugging into the grid and you're just causing problems for, things down the line, is it actually a benefit to the community? And it's got to be done in the right way. And that's what, where we come in and really help with. So, it was nice to hear that it works in a way.
And can I just say, I knew you'd got the award. I'd forgotten that it was the Under 30s award.
Oh, yeah.
And it is so rare that we are talking to people that have achieved so much in such a relatively short space of time. And I almost forget, being a bit older now, that there are people under 30 out there. It's like, who are these under 30s?
I promise I exist. We do exist.
But it's quite incredible. And it is testament to the fact of how seriously you've taken it all. Who, if any one person or a few people, who in your life have been inspirational? Who have you learned from and gone, do you know what? I could really engage and learn from that person. Who's inspirational for you?
Two people, to be honest, in my family. So my granddad is the one who got me into, he took the time to teach me how to solder when I was younger. you know, when everyone else was sort of like, you know, playing with, you know, Lego and things like that, which is great. It's a great construction tool. But he was like, okay, no, Brawlbones, we're going to build a robot that does this. Or we're going to build a train set, though, because, you know, you knew I was into trains. So he built me a train set. And through that, it was like, okay, well, stuff would break and stuff would thing. And it was like, okay, well, we're not just going to buy a new one. We're going to look at it. We're going to look at why a motor does what it does and what's broken in it and do that. And that's definitely the curiosity and the problem solving, taking a broken toy and understanding how it works and then fixing it and putting it back together and then having, you know, the toy renewed. And that was really important. But to be honest, my dad is very much the same as me. You know, Cornwall, there's not a lot of opportunities for much down here, especially in terms of engineering. I have got lucky in a way. I don't want that to be the case for the future. I really think that there is an opportunity around here, especially for now remote working, hybrid working. Certainly, like, people should look more on it. I'm looking at you, Paul, for your dodgy internet connection. We've got super fast Cornwall is a brilliant. That's it. You should move. But I'm really interested in that. And my dad is Cornwall born and bred. You know, from a fishing family out of Newquay. Like, you know, literally going back to the pure basics. And he's now an organics lead for a global scientific chemical company. Wow. Who produces things like so you know, cancer drugs and things like that. He provides all of the equipment that goes into making that. So it's like, you know, a lot of the screening stuff. So enabled to say, okay, well, what does, you know, this compound will look to save X thousands of lives through these types of drugs and things like that, as well as the fun stuff, because he made some color changing bubbles in his career as well. So I'll leave that to him. But you know, he went through the same process I did. You know, he left school, he didn't go to university because it wasn't for him, it wasn't right time. He started out an apprenticeship at a chemical manufacturing company. I did mine an engineering course. You know, it did the same thing, and then we grew our careers from there, from that point onwards. And it's a hard graft. It is a hard graft. I wouldn't deny it. It's if you want a cushy job, it's not for you. You know, you're much better. You know, a lot of university is around. It is a lot of work. Don't be wrong. I know it's a lot of work, the dissertation, things like that. But there's also a lot of partying that happens at university. You won't get that when you're working full time, because you're working and trying to learn on the back of it. So you don't have much of a social life for the next 5 years. But out of the back of that, I'm 29, but I have 12 years industry experience, which puts me up there with the same people on my level. And that's really crucial. If you're really focused, if you're really passionate about one thing, maybe university isn't for you. Maybe try something different. Maybe do something different. You can make the difference there. And then again, my dad did and I did. And so I followed in his footsteps, really.
We talked about age, Mark. And, you know, as you rightly pointed out, Paul and I are at the... towards the twilight of our middle age, and you aren't. It forces us to reflect on how we'll be remembered when we finally shovel off. What's your legacy going to be? How will people describe Mark when you're no longer here with your passion?
To be honest, it's one of these things where it's like, for me, it doesn't bother me in the slightest if no one remembers who I am, as long as I made a difference. Like if I put in a development that was more sustainable than it was going to be previously, if I contributed to the net zero, if I contributed to making someone happier on a sad day, they don't need to remember who I am. They don't remember what it is. It's just, you know, go out, do better than you did yesterday. Right, that's the trick, you know. It's keep growing, keep doing what you're doing, keep, you know, everyone has their passions, everyone has their thoughts, their things, and respect other people's opinions. I mean, and this is the thing I don't get, and for one of a dear friend of mine, we completely disagree on anything political, right? Completely out of the blue, just completely disagree. Still one of my best mates. Still someone I really get on with and I really enjoy, because, you know, it's a lot of stuff is designed to divide us, political stuff, football teams, whatever it is. But reality is, you know, in 100 years, no one's going to give them monkeys. They might have all changed again. You know, you look at the political parties from the 1900s versus what it is now, who cares? You know, it's all going to change again. Yeah.
Everything's monkeys. Track monkeys, data monkeys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what we are, isn't it? I mean, in the broadest possible sense, we are but monkeys who have grown into a more developed society. So yeah, I don't want people to remember me. I want to do what's right by me and my family and teach my children to grow up to be, you know, the next generation of people who are going to solve all the problems. But for me, it's very much the, you know, go out there, do a kind thing, do whatever it needs, you know, it takes for, you know, in your role, in your job, in your thing, you know, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons, go out and do it for the right reasons. I'm an engineer, not because it's not the world's most paid job. I could be a banker and probably still earn more money. I do it because I'm passionate about it, because I love it, because I want to do it, because I want to say, I did that. when I drive past the services on the particular road, I can go, I did that. You know, I'd have my family laugh at me because I call them pedestrian refuge islands, which is and traffic signals rather than, you know, normal names. So you know, that's brilliant. What I want. That's what I'm after.
Beautiful answer.
So refreshing and wonderful. Because look, I'm never going to be that person that gets excited about engineering or data, like the insight that comes from it. But it is so important that we all are passionate about something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you know what? You know, as a human race, right, we have achieved one heck of a lot. You know, we've put stuff on Mars, we've walked on the moon, we've built incredible structures, we've built, you know, motorway networks, road networks, rail networks, shipping, airplane. We've done so much. But there's not one of those things that we've just talked about that I could have any part in, because I'm just not that kind of person. But one thing that I've got that we probably, all of the people that are in that space have got that is in common, and you touched on it earlier, and I love the fact that you woke to the point, you know, we're passionate about something, and we might be passionate about football, you can kind of align with statistics. I can engage with everything that you're talking about because you're passionate about it and you're bringing it to life for me. And the things that I've just really landed with me today about you, Mark, I love that it's your dad and your granddad, and it's like it's Newquay in Cornwall, it's fishing, but then you kind of have broken out of that and go out and do better than you did yesterday. What a philosophy to live life by. I love that. I just think, yes.
I'm sure that's attributed to someone else that isn't me, to be honest. I'm sure that is it.
Hey, it's yours now, mate. Just own that, baby. And go out and do something kind for somebody.
Corny American advert somewhere that I've heard from watching NASCAR, but it's like, that's what it'd be from. I can't.
Mate, own it. Because it's so good and so refreshing. And do you know what? So believable.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, many people can say stuff, but I actually believe that you might get up tomorrow and want to go and do something better than you did today. You won't better your podcast because you've peaked now. That's it. No, yeah. It won't get any better. You've been on the Evie Cappy podcast, it's all the way downhill from here. But maybe, you know, no, I'm joking aside, you'll be constantly developing. It's super interesting. John, we've had a lovely time with Mark. Is there anything that that stands out to you, and any thoughts as we consider how we come into an end?
Yeah, love a nerd. And I think the other thing is something I'm going to take away forever, and I genuinely mean this, Mark. I often am accused of being a little bit, what's the word, sickly sweet with people because I compliment them overly. In other people's opinions, they can all go do one. But for you, I genuinely will take away that thing you said about, I made someone smile on a sad day as your legacy. Mm. And I absolutely adore that. You bring light more than heat into the world. And I think that's a remarkable quality in somebody so intelligent and so capable. You're a good human being. Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Oh yeah, no problem at all. And I mean, you know, you're talking to Paul was saying, you know, he doesn't get passionate about engineering and things like that. But yeah, he's the, you know, the van man. He's, you know, he's passionate about vans, and you can look, you know, your part of your legacy is driving past every Amazon warehouse when they've all got loaded up with EV vans and going, well, I was a part of that. One way or another, you were a part of that. So there's always something you can point out. Everything you work on, there's always something you can point out. And I think that's it. You know, remember what you've done. Remember what you're going to do in the future, and well, believe what you're going to do in the future, and do it. You know, it might fail, whatever.
Guy.
You know,
what a guy.
And you're right, Mark. It doesn't matter whether it fails. You've got to try, and that you know, there's a somewhat famous rivalry between me and another member of the EV Cafe, should remain nameless. That we've got to back startups. It's not John. We've got to back startups. We've got to back people, even if they fail. We've got to invest and give them the start that they need, because one, you know, the stats behind the light bulb must be phenomenal. The stats behind the Wright brothers and you know, flying across the Atlantic or the English Channel and all of that sort of stuff. Everybody was failing many, many, many times before finally they succeeded. So I'm with you on that. And I'm sure in data and AI engineering and Hydrox, you know, projects and others, there's been many times when you've come up against the dead end. And you've had to sort of navigate back and kind of find another way. Fail and fail fast, right? And then find your way out of said dead end and come up with it. But I mean, I'm excited for Hydrox and Stantec,
yeah. Right? So, I mean, you need to change the sign so it's up there so everyone remembers.
I know, I can see the sign, so I'm a visual person. It's like, oh, I know, where's Stantec? What is it? So I was visualizing it. So Stantec... and, you know, they are very fortunate to have Mark Pierce in this business. And what you guys do is really helpful for the industry. And so anybody that needs this kind of help, and obviously we are talking, you know, many people that listen to this will be the charge point operators, people that are looking to plan transport, looking to plan their fleets, thinking about smart grids, you know, the off-grid energy and the amount of energy that we need. It sounds from everything that you've said that you are the people with an answer to those questions, and you can help give intelligent answers so that people don't have to fail, that they don't have to get it wrong, that they can get it right, and they can deliver a solution that is good for today, but also for tomorrow as well, which is really where we want to go.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you for your time today. Thank you for your insight, for representing Hydrox and Stantec so well.
I hope they agree. That's
gonna be well, listen, if they don't, send them to me. I'll sort them out, because you've done a fabulous job, sir. And anybody that has heard and listened to this could be incredibly confident that they're coming to somebody that is not only bloody intelligent with the brain the size of a planet, but emotionally intelligent and an incredibly good communicator. And an incredibly good listener to the challenges of your customers, which has been evidenced by your award. So very well done. I've really enjoyed today. Thank you.
Good. No, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much as well.
Pleasure. So everybody, please do share this podcast with whomever you might think might benefit from it, but also connect with Mark Pierce on LinkedIn. I'm sure that will be something. He's at Hydrox, or maybe it'll change to Stantec in the near future. But do connect with him. Follow those companies if you need any help in the world of engineering and the world of building out your charge point networks, your energy provision, all of that kind of stuff. You can connect with these guys, and also listen to all of our other podcasts. There's lots of other great people. Maybe not quite as all, they're not all as great as Mark, but we do love a bit of competition, so we'll just kind of stir the pot a little bit. But I'm going to leave you with this one thought from Mark that I mentioned, and it was, go out, and do better than you did yesterday. Have a great day, everybody.